Sairam, dear listeners, it's a Thursday evening, 7:30 PM, so it's time for Radio Sai Answering Booth. As always, this is Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai, and this is a show of questions and answers, or a show where we try to understand Swami's message better through the questions that you listeners raise. This week too, we have an important question, a question that has a lot of significance in the present times, especially for Swami's devotees. Let's hope, as always, Swami gives us clarity. Making that prayer and offering our most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet, let's begin this week's answering booth. Before we head to the question, I'd like to read out for you a quote from the Bible today. This is a quote from the New Testament, and it's from the book called The Epistle to the Hebrews, or the Letter to the Hebrews. The quote is as follows. Let us draw near God with a true heart, in full assurance of faith, with our hearts sprinkled clean from an evil conscience, and our bodies washed with pure water. End of quote. Maybe a little context of this quote is necessary before you understand what the words are. This entire book of the New Testament is said to be written to the followers of Christ in Jerusalem, especially asking them to hold fast to their faith in Jesus. One of the practices that they were being discouraged from was that of animal sacrifice, and that was performed with the belief that it would help them atone for their sins. So there was a belief that on particular festive days, if an animal was sacrificed, the sins they have committed will be washed away. And this practice was discouraged by stating that Jesus has given us another way of getting rid of one's sins. The mundane explanation is that by the sprinkling of Jesus' blood, our sins are washed. And so we must turn to Jesus the Savior instead of sacrificing innocent animals. Or that Jesus shed blood during the Passion, and with that he has washed away our sins. But if we read a little of what Swami speaks about Jesus and his life, especially what Swami would explain during his Christmas discourses, I think we will realize that what Jesus lived was an ideal life of love for all, devotion and sacrifice, which if we adopt ourselves, we can progress on our path to God. So when it is said that Jesus' blood, when sprinkled over the heart, cleanses it of sins, I think we would not be wrong in interpreting it as when you take Jesus' life, which is represented by his blood, and adopt even a few drops of idealism that he portrayed, that is a far better means of absolving our sins than the act of sacrificing animals. And sacrificing animals, of course, is again a representation of all the ritualistic methods of worship, festive observations and prayers adopted to sublimate one's sins. And now if we look at this quote, it gives us the means of moving closer to God. First, have faith in God. Fill your heart with the assuredness that faith in God gives. Next, cleanse the heart with the sprinkle of Christ's blood, which is, let all feelings in the heart be born out of love, devotion and selflessness. And finally, it says, wash your bodies with pure water. And pure water, people who interpret the inner meaning of Bible always say, represents the word of God, all the instructions God gives us through the many messengers he sends, or in general, what the scriptures tell us as to how we must lead our lives. So when the heart is filled with faith, the intentions are pure and selfless, and one's body is engaged in doing actions in accordance to what the great sages and saints and messengers have taught us, we begin to draw nearer to God. That is indeed a profound message from the Bible, isn't it? So dear listeners, permit me to read that verse one more time before we head to the question of the week. I quote, let us draw near God with a true heart in full assurance of faith, with our hearts sprinkled clean from an evil conscience, and our bodies washed with pure water. Alright then, let's head to the question that we have for this week. The question is from a listener who wishes to be anonymous, so we will not mention her name. And I have Sister Somana to read out the question for us. So we listen to the question. As I said, it's a very important one, especially for Swami's devotees, given the current situation that we're all in. So we listen to the question. And let's pray that Swami gives us more clarity in trying to answer this question.
Sai Ram, in our Sai Center, many of our brothers and sisters are following Mudenhalli. Many of them say, "Oh, we visit Parthi also." So for them, following Mudenhalli is like a bonus. Many of them are giving a lot of donation. So, does that money mitigate their karma? My first question is it wrong to follow Mudenhalli? If yes, then why? The next question is, when we participate in any event, we work together with the other Sai brothers and sisters who are following Mudenhalli too. But I find it difficult to ignore the thought that now we are standing on two different platforms and trying to work together. How to quieten that thought? Thank you.
So there it is, finally a question on Mudenhalli. I think it was always coming, isn't it? We have already done a pretty detailed discussion on this topic of what's happening in Mudenhalli. I think more than a couple of years back, it was part of the afternoon satsang, and I think if any of you are interested, you can listen to that. Most of our views are conveyed in that. We had a pretty elaborate discussion in that. For those of you listeners who have no clue about what is happening in Mudenhalli and what is being referred to here, I think you're lucky to be blissfully unaware, and so please continue to be that way, because at least on this show, I'm not going to explain what is happening there in detail, and I'm not going to give a background. I'm just going to assume that all listeners know what is happening there, and I'll try to talk about it. Of course, the listener who has asked us this question does have a fair bit of awareness, and I'm sure that she'll be able to relate to whatever we are saying. The first point I'd like to make is, it's not about following Mudenhalli, or in fact even following Prashanthi Nilayam in that, for that matter. It was of course never about giving money at all when it comes to Swami, so that's totally out of question. But even the idea of following, it's never about following Mudenhalli or following Prashanthi Nilayam, and it's not about these kind of labels that we wish to give ourselves, and we tend to get carried away by the labels of this sort. And in a sense, this is one of the main causes for what is happening in Mudenhalli, the entire fiasco. We'll come to that. Of course, I'm not suggesting that the person who is asking this question is thinking that way about, you know, what is the label that we need to carry. It is not in that sense, but this is a very common mistake that we tend to do. We look at a person and say, you know, so-and-so is a Swami student and he has spent so many years with Swami, or for that matter, even any of us, you know, he's working in the ashram, or he's from Radio Sai, or we have seen Swami would speak to him and Swami has called him for interviews, or so-and-so is Swami's relative. I think these are all labels that we tend to go by, and most often we take these labels way too seriously. Yes, when we, you know, when we go for a shopping, or when you go to buy some things, we do go by the label, you know, that's what eventually we do. We look at the label of the product and we procure that substance. But at the end of the day, what matters is what is within, right? As they commonly say, the proof of the pudding is in eating it, right? It's not about how it looks, but how it really tastes. So in the same manner, I think we should be very careful of not going by this label. And I'm saying this for a particular reason, because we tend to see this a lot these days. You know, there are people who do everything contrary to probably what Swami says, and merely by debunking what is happening in Mudenhalli, they feel that, okay, now I'm on the right side, right? I don't believe in Mudenhalli, so I'm good to go. I'm clear otherwise. What we really need to ask ourselves is, are we following Swami? I think that is the most important thing, and that is what we need to keep ourselves obsessed with every day, right? That's the largest struggle, that we all must try and live up to Swami's expectations. It's not about following Mudenhalli or following Prashanthi Nilayam, right? So that is really the true test. It's not about the labels that we carry on ourselves, be it I'm a student or I'm a devotee for so many years, I've been coming to Swami from the 50s and 60s, or I'm a third generation devotee. I think these are all labels. At the end of the day, I think what is important is, are we striving to lead our lives in accordance to Swami's expectations, right? Not whether this person visits Mudan Ali now, or this person visits Mudan Ali and Patli now, or this person debunks Mudan Ali. These are not the labels that we actually should matter to us. And as I said, it's because of a little too much importance that we have given to some of these labels like this is why a phenomenon like Mudan Ali has actually happened, right? We all look at the people there and say that, oh, how can it be false when there are people like this there who have spent so many years with Swami, right? Because we give importance to some of these things rather than asking, is so-and-so following Swami's words, or what has Swami said in this matter, and is what is happening in accordance with Swami's words? Instead of asking that question, we say it's a Swami student. It's a person who has served Swami and Swami's institutions for 30 years, or so-and-so has been in the trust. And all of these questions is what confuses this, and to an extent, as I said, is responsible for the confusion that is created because of what is happening in Mudan Ali. Of course, the next question is, but who is perfect? Right? If it is all about only who is listening to Swami and who is obeying Swami and who is living in accordance with Swami, who is perfect here? Is there anybody who is perfectly leading a life like that? Then does that mean that, you know, there is nobody to follow or nobody to look up to? Or, you know, when I say this, the first question which probably people who support what is happening in Mudan Ali will say, that are you trying to say that what is happening in Prashanthi Nilayam is perfect and what is happening there is wrong? No, that is not what I'm trying to say. This is where the idea of institutionalization comes into picture, right? This is a word I'm going to be repeating quite often during this explanation. Institutionalization of something is what happens in this kind of a scenario. Let me give you an example. Let me say that, you know, being in Parthi, there are certain aspects of Swami's message I don't follow. Let's say, for example, but at some point, I will be held up for scrutiny with reference to what Swami says is the way we need to lead our lives, right? Because when I claim that I am in Prashanthi Nilayam, I am a Swami's devotee, at some point, at least, if not by others, at least Swami will hold me up for the thing by saying that, you know, you're claiming to be this, but are you living in accordance to my words, right? That will be the final reference point when we say that I'm living in Prashanthi Nilayam, right? Let's say tomorrow I decide to start a school, right? I'm going to start a free school. I'm inspired by Swami. And I start going around telling people about this, that I'm having this idea. And so I tell people that, you know, it would be wonderful if you all can contribute and it will help me run the school. So in other words, I start soliciting funds. Probably based on the goodwill that I've earned till that point in time, or the reputation that I've built for myself in the society or in this community which I'm living in, people might come forward and help me, right? But instead, now I go around saying that Swami has asked me to start the school. Swami has come in my dream, or Swami has inspired me from within, and Swami has asked me to start the school, and I come and tell you that Swami has asked you to contribute to the school that I'm starting. Still, as I said, people will go by the labels that I'm carrying, right? The labels of I'm a Swami student and I have so many years of association with Swami, and, you know, these are my past track records, right? All of these labels will be seen and they'll say, all right, you can still trust this fellow and you can help him. But at some point, my actions will come under scrutiny with reference to Swami's words, isn't it? At some time, I will be answerable when my actions are referred to what Swami says. And somebody is going to say that, no, but Swami says that he'll never do this. Swami says that he'll never ask money. Then how can Swami ask somebody to ask money and do a thing like this? I'll come to this because this is a very important point of how Swami expects us to do seva. I'll come to that little later, right? But you understand the point I'm trying to make. As long as I'm associated with Swami and I'm claiming Swami's name and start asking, doing things like this, if not today, if not tomorrow, at some point, my actions will be scrutinized based on what Swami has told. But see what is happening in Mudan Ali. Initially, it started off as inspiration, right? Swami has inspired us to do good work. Then they said that Swami has commanded me to ask you. Then people are ready to give, you know. Again, it goes by somebody is doing good work, why not help them, right? And now what has happened is they have started giving discourses in Swami's name, started publishing books, and they are contorting Swami's message in the source itself. In other words, what action would be considered as a deviation from Swami's message when scrutinized is now actually being institutionalized through this methodology, isn't it? So tomorrow, if somebody who is associated with Muddin Ali, their actions are scrutinized, it will be scrutinized with reference to what are the discourses which are being given post-2011, right? And all of these, what would otherwise be deviations from Swami's message, what are otherwise being seen as not in accordance to Swami's message, now start falling into acceptable norms of doing things, right? That is what is happening. That is the most dangerous thing that is happening. So I'm not saying that we at Prashant Nilayam or we at Parthi are perfect in all ways. It is definitely not so, and it is definitely not likely to be so, right? If you heard the answer that I gave last week, it was about facing different and difficult kind of people in Swami's organization during our work. As I said then, I mean, if you do not find obstacles like that in the Sai organization, then there's something wrong, right? You are living in a different world, and because this is all meant for our spiritual progress, you will have different ideas, you will have different kind of people. So it's not that whatever happens in Parthi is perfect. But the standards by which a person associated with Prashant Nilayam will be tested and is answerable to is the standard that Swami has set. If not today, if not tomorrow, at some point you will be scrutinized based on what Swami has said. But the moment you start contorting the message itself, you are justifying those who stray and also give them legitimacy under Swami's name, right? And how does this whole thing happen? Through the instructions of one person, unfortunately one Swami student, who alone can see Swami, who alone can hear what Swami says, and that has to be accepted as Swami's updated message post-2011, right? And even that idea of Swami communicating through another person, Swami has categorically said that he would never do that, right? He has always said that I do not need people to mediate between me and my devotees. I have one-to-one relationship with my devotees. I have heart-to-heart connection with my devotees. Well, these are not words we are putting into Swami's mouth. These are all words that we have heard from Swami's mouth over and over again. It is not even one stray comment that Swami has made. This is something which Swami has said right from the 1950s, 1960s. 1960s when people started claiming that Swami has appointed them to do Swami's work, and you know, a lot of these mediators began in the 1960s. Swami said it in the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, till the very end Swami kept repeating it. So it is not a stray message which Swami said in one discourse for one particular context, right? Swami has very, very categorically said that he would never do that. But then the question is raised that Swami has guided so many people through others' dreams, right? And Swami also says that we are all supposed to be Swami's instruments in some way or the other. So how can we say that, how can we take this instruction of Swami very, very literally and say Swami will never communicate to another person? Well, absolutely, that's true, that Swami does inspire others and Swami does communicate through others' dreams. It does happen. I mean, I'm not saying that that is completely a non-phenomenon in the Sai world. It's not so. Swami's devotees do have these experiences. But again, here the problem is the institutionalization of a one-off phenomenon, right? Swami may reach out to a devotee through another person's dream. And I think I've spoken about this also, maybe even in that satsang we mentioned. You know, sometimes when Swami gives us instructions, maybe in a dream or from a voice within or from a situation around us or some kind of circumstances or coincidences, if our mind is filled with all kinds of reasons and thoughts and about that particular situation, if we're going to take a decision on something and Swami is trying to indicate something to us, we may miss the message, right? So in such a case, it might happen that Swami might give the instruction to us through a completely different person who is not at all associated with the situation, right? And when a message comes like that, you will know for sure that this is Swami's message. So there are plenty of examples like that. There are plenty of examples where such kind of things will happen. But these are all one-off phenomenon. But what Swami was warning his devotees against always was the idea of institutionalization of a medium, right? If Swami really wanted to guide people through others, I think Swami would have had probably disciples like how Adi Shankara or Buddha had, where they again created monks and saints and sages of their own type who were just like the master, who would go and, you know, you could take their word as the master's word and you could obey them, right? That's a different kind of a model where the master creates disciples and who, you know, they carry on the faith that, I mean, that's how there are many traditional, seeds of wisdom like that, you know, the Shankara Peetam is there, many such things where you look at the disciple as a representative of the master. Really, if Swami wanted to have messengers like that, I think that would have been a different model altogether. But when Swami says that I want all of you to be instruments of Swami, I think the model which Swami has always spoken about and always inspired in all of us is different. That listening to Swami, we get inspired, we modify our lives, we sublimate our decisions and the way we lead our lives, right? And we lead a good life, and seeing the way we lead a life, Swami says that others should be inspired to lead a noble life themselves. Right? This is completely different from the idea of being a medium to convey what Swami wants to another person. That's a totally different point of view altogether, right? Swami may choose to communicate to a person through another, but what Swami very, very clearly discourages is, again, the institutionalization of such a process, right? A like of which we see in Mudanalli, which is happening there, where the medium starts getting worshipped. The person who says that I alone can see Swami and I can hear Swami speaking and I'm conveying it to you. Now we can see what is happening there. That person starts getting worshipped. That person literally becomes like the central figure that is worthy of all the adoration and worship, right? This is precisely what Swami was warning against. In fact, if you read the book of people like Professor Kasturi, he would narrate how Swami would always caution him of this thing, that when he goes out, Swami would send Professor Kasturi to different parts of the country, right? And Professor Kasturi would interact with people who probably would never have the opportunity to come and see Swami. So when they would see Professor Kasturi, they would start literally worshipping him like how they would worship Swami. And Swami would, in many, many occasions, he says how Swami warned him about that. Swami said that, you know, you are just going there as, you know, you're just trying to speak to them about Swami. You are not Swami's messenger. I don't need any messenger in that sense. Swami was constantly telling him that because this thing is not good for the person who is receiving such adoration as well as who is giving this, I mean, who is offering this kind of adoration and worship to the person whom they think is the representative of Swami. In fact, the other day we were speaking to one of Swami's old students in Sikkim. He was narrating how, I think it was late Chiranjirao Garu who was sent to West Bengal. Swami had told him to go to West Bengal and I think participate in one of the events there. And this was the first time he was going there, and the people in West Bengal, I hope I'm getting it right, it's West Bengal, people there were very, very excited that he's coming, and they just went a little overboard. And when he was supposed to get down at the railway station, they had literally, you know, filled that railway station with Balvika's children and youth and all of those people with flowers and garlands, and they made a big festive arrangement like they were welcoming Swami himself. And finally, when the train came and Chiranjirao Garu was about to get off the train, he saw this entire arrangement there, and apparently he refused to get off the train. He said, if I get down here and if I receive this kind of adoration and worship, I will be thrown out of Prashanti Nilayam. Swami will not, you know, accept this kind of a thing. He refused. He said, no, please move away. Don't do all this. I've just come here. You know, I'm just another devotee like all of you. I've just come here. We are all equals. You cannot treat me like this, right? And immediately the arrangements were all cancelled, and other places where they had planned to invite him like this, they were all were all instructed not to do any of these things, because this was how particular Swami was about this, that even when Swami was physically available, and if Swami, there were devotees who could not reach out to Swami did not want this kind of dispersion of focus towards other people, right? That is why the institutionalization of mediumship, which Swami spoke about categorically. Swami said, no, I will not do this. I will not make devotees dependent on any one individual like this through this kind of process. And Swami would say that if anybody comes and tells you that, you know, Swami has instructed me to tell you this or this, Swami said, just dismiss them from your presence. You know, Swami is very vehement about that. Now you might again ask this question is, but doesn't this kind of reception and this kind of treatment happen in the Sai organization? Being Swami's student, I can tell you that in some places they do this even to Swami's students. Yes, it does happen in the Sai organization, and when it happens, whenever it happens, wherever it happens, it is wrong, right? It is not meant to be that way. Because, as Swami said, accepting such hospitality is again Swami's words, and of course, the whole idea why this is wrong is that because people are not meant to substitute their hero with Swami's students or Swami's so-and-so or Swami's staff, any of these things. Our focus needs to be on Swami, right? And even if it happens in Swami's organizations, it is wrong. As I said, at some point, we will refer back to what Swami expects and we will correct it, as long as we say that this is the standard by which we are going to keep scrutinizing ourselves. Right? So it is one thing to point at what is happening in Udin Ali and saying it is wrong. We don't approve of it. But the more important thing is to look at what is happening there, identify that this is wrong, this is not what Swami expected, and looking at ourselves and saying that, are we doing this? Can we correct ourselves? Right? This is one of the most important things that we must do. It is not about stopping at, is what is happening in Udin Ali wrong? Is it right or wrong? Can you tell me that? That is not where we need to stop. We need to look at it and we identify why it is wrong and we must correct ourselves, right? This is actually the opportunity that Swami has actually given us. At the end of the day, whatever is happening is Swami's will, you know, be it Mudan Ali or be it whatever is happening across the world, everything is happening after being approved by Swami's will, right? And this kind of situation which is happening in Swami, for Swami's devotees, we can take it as Swami telling us that this is what you should be careful about. And if you don't watch out, if you don't be vigilant about the mistakes that you do, you know, this is the danger that you'll face. Don't do this, right? In fact, there is this very beautiful conversation in the Ramkatha Rasamayana where Swami writes about what happens the day before Mother Sita is abducted by Ravana. And Swami writes this very beautifully. Lord Rama sends away Lakshmana on some errand, and Rama and Sita start discussing about what is going to happen the next day, where Rama says that Rama is going to begin, Ravana is going to abduct you tomorrow, and I mean, they discuss this whole thing. That's how Swami writes in the Ramakatha Swaini. And in that course of that conversation, Rama makes a very beautiful point. He says, you know, Ravana is a great man. Ravana is also a devotee, right? He was supposed to be a great devotee of Lord Shiva. He's a great man. He's a scholar. He's a devotee. And Lord Rama says, we have to hold Ravana as an example for the rest of the world that devotion alone is not enough, right? So as Swami shows us this entire drama of Mudan Ali or anything like that happening in front of us, Swami is through that alerting us that, see, this is the danger. It's not about Swami's being a Swami student or being a Swami's devotee for so many years or serving Swami for so many years or doing all of these things. All of these labels are not important. There is something more subtler than that. That is what you need to look at, right? Of course, in the question you raised the point about they giving money and won't that mitigate their karma. I'm actually not clear of what you meant by that in that question. But donating money anywhere does not mitigate karma anyway, right? It's not that you can do bad karma, come and give it in Prashanthi Nilayam and you can mitigate your karma. No, it doesn't work that way. Swami is very clear. Good for good and bad for bad is what karma is all about. And this itself is a misconception that by giving money somewhere, we can get rid of the bad karma that we do. But if you're asking about is giving money to what is happening in a place where Swami's words are not being followed or where it is a digression from Swami's message and Swami's way of doing things, contributing money there, what happens to the karma that comes out of that? Well, probably that we'll talk about. That's an important thing that we need to address. But before that, I think let's talk about this argument which people often bring about, right? This is an argument you'll always hear from people who are supporting Udin Ali and who speak very highly of what is happening there, is this concept of what about the quote-unquote good work that is happening there, right? So when I'm going there or when I'm giving money, I'm only supporting the good work. What about all the good work that is happening over there? Well, there are two problems with this approach. First, the more important and the larger point, doing charity or good work is not new in today's world, right? Neither is the Satya Sai organization the only one which has been doing this kind of charitable work. In fact, I think last year there was this news release in India about, can you believe it, 20,000 NGOs lost their FCRA license. FCRA license is what is required for you to be able to accept funds from abroad. 20,000 NGOs lost their FCRA license. Can you imagine then how many thousands more of NGOs are actually active in India? 20,000 NGOs, which means there are so many organizations which are doing quote-unquote good work, which are doing quote-unquote charitable work, right? It is not that this is happening only here or only under Swami's banner. So what was the necessity for Swami, the avatar of the age, to come and start an NGO or a charitable trust, right? If there are so many trusts and there is good work happening, there's no lack of good work. There are a lot of people who are doing charity, a lot of people who are reaching out to the poor. And in fact, if you read that kind of news, unfortunately, our news and news reports don't speak of such work. If you were to really go in search of such work which is happening, it is so moving, really. It is so moving how much work is being done so selflessly. So why should Swami come as an avatar and start a charitable trust and start an organization which does seva? One of the main principles that Swami wanted us to follow is least advertisement of the work and zero solicitation of funds, right? Through these two points, actually, Swami was giving us a very, very pure model of doing service or doing seva. As we all know, when Swami says seva, I'm not going into that part of what Swami says about doing seva. Seva is always spoken of as a tool, as a medium for spiritual progress, right? That is Swami's basic model, where it is not about doing good work, but it is about what does that good work do to you? That is what is the main idea of the whole thing, right? That's probably on another day, if there's an appropriate question, we'll talk about that. But this is what Swami's idea is, and how does that model work by these two basic principles? As less advertisement as possible. A part of that advertisement is necessary because even the people who will benefit from the work will be informed when the news is spread, right? So it's not advertisement for self-aggrandizement, but advertisement for the necessity of passing the word around, right? That's what Swami would say. Swami would tell some of the people who are coming from different samitis, the district presidents and state presidents, Swami would tell them that, you know, speak about Swami's hospitals so that people know that if there is a needy person, he can be led to this particular place. It is for that purpose. So least advertisement as possible and very, very strictly zero solicitation of funds, right? This was something which Swami was very particular about. Why is this so important? And I think it's very necessary to spend some time and to understand this model that Swami has given us. Let's say I'm walking in the road and a beggar comes up to me and starts troubling me for alms. He's not letting me move or this way, that way. And he says, please give me some money. I'm hungry or whatever it is. Let's say I give him some money. I just open my purse and give him some 10 or 20 bucks. So the money that otherwise I would not have given him, I am parting with because he's literally making me give that money. Or, you know, he's stalling my movement at that moment, or I'm just getting rid of him by giving that money, right? When I do that, the act of giving money is not necessarily seva in that sense. I'm actually getting rid of that person by giving that money. So when we say that we go around soliciting funds, it's nothing wrong when you look at it from the idea of how generally NGOs function. There's nothing wrong in that. Almost all charity in the world happens like that. They look for people who can spare some money from their earnings and they kind of go and solicit that money. They kind of impress upon them that they can part with that money and this it'll be used for good work, right? And when you start doing that, the money which probably that person will not part with otherwise, you know, he is giving it to you either to not appear cheap in front of you or to, you know, whatever is the reason, it is not coming spontaneously. I think that's the point I'm trying to make. There's no spontaneity in him giving away. But the model that Swami wanted us to follow was different in this sense. Swami says, you want to do good. So you start doing good with the money that you have. Use only the money that you have, or you form a group of two or three people, only the money that you three or four people are capable of contributing, you start doing work with that. And Swami says that when we start doing that, your investment in that good work or charitable work is not the money that you put in, but your spontaneous sacrifice. And seeing you voluntarily and, you know, probably cutting down on your expenses, that's what Swami would say. You do sealing on desires and do seva with that. Seeing you work like that, Swami says, others will be inspired and voluntarily they will want to come and contribute. They will come and ask you, can I be part of this work? And when they come, when he or she willingly gives out of their own interest, Swami says, they also invest into the work, not their money, but their sacrifice, right? That is the most important thing. And Swami says that in this manner, when work is done, the quantity of work that is done may be less, right? If you're able to go and solicit money from corporates who are ready to part away with hundreds of crores of rupees of money, probably the work that you do may be larger, right? That's exactly what is happening in Modan Ali. You're able to make big projects. You're able to make, do things which probably can be reached out to many, many people, right? The quantity can be large. But what Swami says is when the investment is not the money but the sacrifice of the people who are involved, the quality of the work is actually completely different. There are plenty of stories of what happens when seva is done this way. You might have heard it on the other shows on the radio, and I think we've spoken about it many, many times. If there's an opportunity, we'll speak about that later. But there's so many beautiful stories of what happens when work is done this way. The transformation that work begins is phenomenal. It cannot be quantified in numbers. And this is the work that Swami wants us to do, right? Literally, this is the challenge that Swami is asking us to give, is throwing at us. This is a pure model that Swami is showing us, and Swami is challenging us to experiment with this and see the results for ourselves. And it's very, very difficult. It's not easy, right? The moment you start a work, especially when you start making a commitment, it becomes very difficult. You're then looking at, you know, how can I get funds so that this work keeps going on, and you start becoming desperate. It's not easy. That's why it's not an easy model to follow, but it's a purer model and it's a sure model. That's what Swami would often say. When you start doing good work, the money which is required will come to you. There's no way that the money is necessary, will not come to you, right? But this is a very, very pure model that Swami is giving us and asking us to experiment. The question is, does all the work that happens in the Sai organization happen like this? Is it happening purely following this model? I think I would not be wrong in saying that it is not so. Sadly, it is not so. Because as I said, this is not easy. This is not an easy model. And the other thing is, there are a lot of people who come and join under the banner of Sai organization who have this idea of doing good work, but not necessarily prescribed to Swami's method or are even aware of how Swami wants us to do, right? So even in Swami's organization, people do the mistake of concentrating too much on the work and, you know, on, as Swami would say, instead of concentrating on the quality, you end up concentrating on the, instead of concentrating on the quality, you end up concentrating on the quantity, right? And it does happen. I'm not saying that this happens only in Modan Ali and it does not happen in Prashanthi Nilayam and the organization under Swami's name. It is not like that. I'm just saying that this is the model Swami expects. And this again goes back to what happens in Modan Ali opposed to what could happen here in Prashanthi Nilayam. At the end of the day, this is the standard by which we will scrutinize our own work, right? At some point, we will say that, no, this is something wrong with this model. This is not what Swami wanted us to do. And at some point, you'll probably go back to Swami's discourses, and there are plenty of discourses where Swami has explained this whole thing of how he wants seva to be done. I mean, it cannot be clearer than that. Swami has put it in his own words. I started off with a quote from the Bible, right? The Bible was written from memory, right? People who lived with Jesus, after Jesus had moved on, they kind of wrote down whatever they had heard as his message. And that is what is given us to us as Bible. And we revere that as one of the holy books. But when we're talking about Swami's discourses, these are discourses Swami gave himself. He has allowed us to record it for posterity, right? And Swami has said clearly what are his expectations of how seva is to be done. So at some point, I think when we are doing some of these activities under the banner of Sai organization, we will look at this and correct ourselves. It will happen. If not you and me, somebody down the line is going to come and ask these questions and correct it. But as I explained, what is happening in Mudanalli is just the opposite, right? Now they make it appear like these are Swami's own words. Swami is himself asking for these things. And what is a digression from Swami's model, what is a digression from how Swami expected us to work, is being institutionalized by saying that, you know, this is the updated message of Swami. Post 2011, this is what Swami is saying. And again, sadly, it is being said, you and I can't hear, there's only one person who can hear it, and he interprets it, and the others can follow it, right? When I look at this, this is again not just with reference to what is happening in Mudanalli. In general, you know, I personally have been a Swami student for 5 years, and for a few years after that, I've been around. I can tell that I've heard at least 10 or 11 convocation discourses that Swami has given. In not one of them, Swami ever said, look, I've given you all free education. I want you to come back and support my university and my schools. I want you to take care of my organization. Now it's time for you to pay back. Swami would never say that. Forget about the convocation addresses. Not in any personal conversation that I've heard of or I've been witness to or I've heard from others or interviews that Swami has given to students, Swami has ever said, I have given you free education. Come and take care of my organization. That is not in Swami's nature. The only thing that Swami would repeatedly say is, lead a good life, get a good name for yourself, make your parents happy, and lead an ideal life as Swami has taught you to. That is the only thing that Swami would say. Right? Because that is the standard that Swami set for all of us. That when you do good work, you do it with absolutely no sense of return or sense of what am I to get in that. And now there's an institutionalization of this idea that Swami students should come back and they should support the work which is happening because it's good work, it's benefiting people. No, that is not how Swami would work. And so if it is happening in the Sai organization, if you feel in your centers and samitis this model is not being followed, I think it is our duty not simply to look at Mudanalli and say, oh, these are wrong things, this should not happen like that. This is a mirror that Swami is showing it to us. This is wrong. Look at yourself. If you're doing that mistake, correct yourself. Forget about what is happening there and correcting them or doing whatever it is. Correct yourself, right? So it's not just about good work, but a model that Swami is challenging us to experiment with. Right? That is the first problem I said is the problem with this myth of good work which is happening there. The other reason why this good work is a very dangerous myth is it comes to the fundamental claim that it is Swami who is doing all of this, right? When we say that a lot of good work is happening, the fundamental thing is there Swami is in this particular subtle form and he is guiding people and all the work is being guided by whatever Swami is guiding the people there to do. Well, after all these arguments that I've been giving and all the arguments, if you go back and listen to that discussion we've had or the many articles which are there available on the website, after all these arguments, if indeed it is Swami who is operating there, I can tell you that you can just forget all of these arguments. Just forget all of these things because they're all meaningless, right? Let me say that I'm sitting in Mandir and Swami were to come and give me an instruction directly. Swami is coming personally and Swami is giving me an instruction. When Swami is giving an instruction, I will not go and refer to Swami's discourses or philosophy and say that is Swami saying, is it in accordance to what Swami told in 1964 in this particular discourse? I don't think I will do that. If I am getting an instruction directly from Swami, I think it's only about faith in Swami. I will not look at whether it's justifiable, it is right or wrong, what will the world think. I will not think of any of that. I will just follow Swami, right? That's how all of us will be, right? So all this analysis of what is wrong there is clearly based on this conviction that it is not Swami who is guiding there. Because if it was, if I even had the slightest doubt that maybe it is Swami who is guiding there or maybe Swami is doing these things, I wouldn't be sitting and giving any of these arguments at all, right? A couple of weeks back, I just happened to have a very mild altercation with an elder who otherwise I have a lot of respect for, who has contributed immensely for Swami's mission. And he started this topic of Mudan Ali and he started telling, oh, what a lot of good work is happening. And he said, sir, I completely disagree with that. And I started trying to explain to him how I don't agree with that. And he just put me off by saying that, yeah, I know you will say all these things because you come from Radio Sai and this is what you're supposed to say, right? That's what he said. Because you are being, literally he said, because you're being paid by the Central Trust, you will tell or you will parrot whatever is the stance of the Central Trust. I think many of you also might be thinking like that, right? Yeah, this is what he is supposed to say and this is what he will say. If you are thinking like that, of course, you're free to think of it that way. But I've said this before, even about any other explanation I give on the show, right? We do a lot. I mean, those of you who have been following the show for many, many weeks now, and I'm very grateful to all of you who has been following, who has been sending feedback, sending questions. You will understand that all of the explanation that I give, however rational it might sound, it all comes from the fact that Swami has said this, and if whatever Swami has said has to be perfect, Swami has said means that is what it is, the truth, and it is literally like backworking, like in maths and physics you would have this. You know, you have the answer, even in chemistry we would have this. They say that product A and product B react and you get product B. You're given the answer. They say that this is what is the product that was found. Now you explain what is the phenomenon which is happening. So we back calculate, okay, if this is what is the result, then this is what it is. All of the explanations that I give on this show, or for that matter, any other program we all speak on in Radio Sai, is after the fact that we believe that Swami is God and whatever Swami has said has to be perfect. If whatever Swami has said has to be perfect, let us try to understand how it is perfect, right? That is how we work the understanding of Swami's message all the time, right? And once that is established, then you're able to understand Swami's message better. Exactly same is the case with what is happening at Mudan Ali too. I think when as individuals, I don't know whether we mentioned this during that satsang then, all of us who were, who spoke on that particular occasion, or for that matter, I can say this on behalf of many of my colleagues in Radio Sai and my colleagues who live in, who work in other institutions in Prashanthi Nilayam. Many of us, when we sought an answer as to what is happening in Mudan Ali, Swami, are you really there? Is it really you who's guiding those people there? This is literally the direct question when we ask Swami. Many of us, individually, for all of us, the intuitive answer that Swami within gave us was categorically, it is not Swami in Mudan Ali, right? This was the answer we got within, and this is not just my experience, not one or two of us, a lot of us. This is our personal answer we got from Swami, right? So once that understanding has been established clearly, now we look at the whole thing and try to understand why what is happening is wrong and why it is, when we look at it, it's actually a little scary, right? Because I don't know how much other people appreciate that. For us, this is a much bigger shock and a blow than anybody else, because all those people involved in Mudan Ali are people whom we have grown up in Swami's college and university idolizing. We looked at them and say that, oh, this person has served Swami for 30 years and, you know, so-and-so is a gold medalist and he has pleased Swami through his work. We have looked at them and said that how beautiful relationship they have with Swami and how I wish I could become like that. And suddenly when Swami gives us this truth that, no, what is happening there has got nothing to do with me, we have to find reasons to understand how this whole thing could happen. How can all this happen, right? And you look at the work which is happening and say that, okay, so it is not just about seva, it is about how it is being done, because that's what is not happening there, right? So it's a while this entire drama which is happening in Mudanalli is very painful to witness for all of us, I think it is a beautiful opportunity that Swami has given us to look at it and correct our own perspective of what is happening, right? So what is true seva? Is it enough just to be around Swami, merely being a student? Does it mean anything? One may have served Swami for 30 years, but that does not make one infallible. All the work that appears good need not necessarily be good. All of these understandings, which probably we would not have thought so deeply about, we are thinking about it because of what is happening there, right? So when at the core of all of this, like given the understanding that we are saying that we don't believe there, Swami is the one who is giving all these instructions. So when at the core, what is happening is a lie that Swami is there in a subtle form and guiding all of this. Now when you talk of all the good work which is happening, however glorious it might appear, however grand it may be panning out to be, the whole thing becomes nothing but a charade to cover a lie, isn't it? Right? Doesn't everything else becomes a charade just to cover up and promote this lie that Swami is guiding so-and-so and getting work done? And one may be participating in the work monetarily or physically, and as you said, by thinking that after all good work is happening. But even if doing that, if you are contributing to the good work, aren't you contributing and furthering the travesty which is happening there? Right? That's what is the most dangerous thing. When you claim, what about the good work which is happening, right? Of course, many questions can be raised. Why would anybody do this? And, you know, after all, they are Swami's devotees for so many years, and so many of Swami's students are there, so many Swamiji's and Sannyasi's are coming there, and all of these things. Let me tell you, I can give you arguments for each one of those questions, right? Each one of them can be countered and broken down. But they will all be based on this intuition or revelation that Swami has given from within, that it is not Swami who is operating from there. And when I look at whatever happens there from this standpoint, for me it is nothing more than an eye-opener to understand the many slips that can happen in the spiritual path, right? So if you ask me, why would anybody do this? Why would anybody build such a huge lie and then and do all of these big works to cover up that or to promote that? Well, if you ask me about the individuals who are perpetrating this whole thing, well, I'll have to finally say that the end cause of it is what Swami says as the basic failings of the human being, which are kama, krodha, moha, lobha, and mada and matsarya, right? And that is what it is. Eventually, when you look at it, these are the things which will lead anybody to do something which is blunderous. Again, that is not to suggest that only the people in Mudanalli have these flaws, and just because somebody claims allegiance to Prashanthi Nilayam or somebody claims that I don't believe in Mudanalli does not mean that he is absolved of these inner failings, right? Or that the Sai organization is perfect, it does not have any of these things. Well, I'm not suggesting any of that. Wherever a person goes astray, I think the root cause will be these six inner enemies, right? Based on the circumstances which that person is going through, or based on the means that the person is taking up, they show up in different ways. Right, it is showing up in this manner in Mudanalli. It might show up in a very, very subtle manner, or a controllable or not so harmful manner within the Sai organization or within our Sai Samitis, where somebody's anger and jealousy and greed might show up and gets controlled, maybe does not have complete expression, right? So just like how Swami would talk about characters like Ravana and Hiranyakashipu, Swami did not merely dismiss them as these are villains, you know, you should never be like that. But Swami wanted us to look at their character and look at their personality, not their character, look at their personality. They were great people, right? They were scholars, they were scientists, and Swami would say that Hiranyakashipu had conquered this and Ravana had mastered so many arts, right? They were all great people, but at the end of it, what caused their downfall or what made them do the wrong things were these simple things of kama or krodha or lobha or madha or matsarya, right? These are the six enemies finally it will come to. Please don't take me wrong. I'm not name calling people there and saying that, oh, they're all like Ravanas and Hiranyakashipus. That's not what I'm saying. what a beautiful model that Swami has created. Swami has, you know, created this entire drama using people whom we have looked up to and, as I said, looked at labels and celebrated. Those who were students, those who were wardens, people who had a lot of respect in the Sai organization, who had done a lot of work in the Sai organization from the very place that we all belong to, from the same platform, as you said, you know, we are all, it looks like now we are staying on the different platform. From the same place where we all are thriving from, Swami has drawn some individuals and created this drama. I am not saying that directly Swami has done that. Everything is Swami's will, I'm saying, in that point of view. This whole thing is happening to show that, see, these are the things you have to be careful of, right? It's not just about how many years you've been coming to Swami or how many times in a year you visit Prashanthi Nilayam or after Swami's, you know, how many years you've been working in Swami's institutions. None of these things matter. At the end of the day, are you looking at yourself and trying sincerely to uproot these inner enemies? As Swami would often say, you know, the container of the heart, you cannot have devotion in a dirty container, right? Swami would say that about Ravana. That's what happened. He had devotion for Lord Shiva, but he did not invest enough time and he was not sincere enough to uproot some of these inner enemies. So that is what Swami is actually showing us. What is happening there is a sign that it is not enough if you just achieve these things. You have to do personal sadhana to get rid of all these six inner enemies that, you know, that can show up in any form or the other, right? And the basic idea behind what is happening in Mudanalli or following Mudanalli and following Prashanthi Nilayam is that when at the core, what is at the core of this whole drama which is happening there is a lie. It is like this, you know, you could have a jewelry which is actually covering gold, as they would say. It is plated with gold. At the end of the day, however much that gold glitters, its value is what is inside it, right? If the metal it is made of is actually a base metal or a cheaper metal, that is what is the value of that piece of jewelry, however much it might glitter at that point in time. Contrary to that, if there is a diamond and if you've probably, let's say you've dropped it in slush and then you pick it up, however dirty it might appear, however it might be covered with all this, filth, at the end of the day, you will still pick it up and you will not discard it because you are looking at what is valuable in the core of the thing. So outside it might have some dirt. And if you look at the Sai organization, all kinds of people will come here. And that is why today, whomever we're seeing in Mudanalli are primarily people who have come from Swami's organization. Because Swami's organization too will attract all kinds of people. We have also come to Swami because we are also all kinds of people. We are not purely because we are all saints. But when we come here, we all have this opportunity to work on ourselves and ensure that we lead our lives according to Swami and move closer to Swami. Right? That is an opportunity which Swami is giving all of us. So I think this is what I wanted to say. I know there are a lot of things you can keep talking about it, but what is more important for us in our spiritual journey is when we look at the other person, what can I learn from it and how can I correct myself? That's more important than anything else, I feel, and this is what I wanted to tell. Excuse me, about the question about how do you work with the people from the organization who are now showing more interest in Mudanalli, going there? Well, I think first of all, our individual attitude must be one of sympathy, right? It's not about hatred. It's not about branding them, or it's not saying, oh, you've done this in your, it's easy to do that. Believe me, it's very easy to say that, oh, this person is a Mudanalli person now. Instead of that, I think we should have sympathy because they are like any of us and they are just losing their way. And especially a lot of devotees who just go there out of curiosity and, you know, eventually those who are really sincere will find their way back, not back to Prashanthi Nilayam, back to Swami. It's not about Prashanthi Nilayam or Mudanalli. It's about turning back to Swami. I think it will eventually happen. So have sympathy for them. But it is not wrong to ensure that those who are turned towards Mudanalli or those who are being influenced by what is happening in Mudanalli, to keep them away from important posts and roles within the Sai Center. There's nothing wrong in that because this, again, Swami has categorically said. In fact, in a discourse, Swami was even discouraging the Sai organization to from working with other NGOs. And Swami was saying this, because the approach the other NGOs will have will be different. The approach that we have to seva is very different. So as much as possible, Swami would say, don't necessarily combine with other organizations. And when that is the case, when in, you know, as I said, the whole thing is based on a claim that Swami is speaking through a particular individual, right? And in Prashanta Nilayam, when we say that we do not buy that or we do not agree with that, automatically what you're saying, you might not say it in words, automatically what you are suggesting is what is happening there is a fraud, right? Whether you say it or not, that's what it is. If you say that I don't believe that Swami is talking to you, which means you are cheating people in Swami's name. And that is a very serious thing for the institution when it looks at it. So the institution will have to respond in that manner. So when you're looking at it institution-wise, individually, of course, as I said, we should have sympathy for them. We should look at them and say, how do I avoid myself from doing this mistake? How do I stop myself from doing this mistake? That should be our individual attitude. But from the institution side, there's nothing wrong in saying that please stay out of these posts and these roles. Sometime back, I had a person from Singapore writing how some of these people from devotees who have been going to Mudanalli are Balvikas teachers, and they have started teaching students based on the discourses given in Mudanalli after 2011. I mean, that is very dangerous, right? That is not what we want. As I said, I mean, you'll end up doing the same mistake which I was talking about, institutionalization of the mistakes or the deviations from Swami's message. That's not what we want. So institutionally, it is nothing wrong to take that stand and say that please don't take any roles of importance and of, be it as an office bearer or a role of significance and importance like a Balvikas teacher or a youth coordinator or whatever. You can, I don't think it is wrong in telling them, please do not come here and, you know, let's keep away from that kind of a thing. But personally, I think you have to keep in mind that the flaw that is probably showing up in some of these people is a flaw that is dormant within us. I think that is something that we should always keep in mind. Keep that in mind. That should be the attitude for a spiritual aspirant. As Swami would beautifully tell in the Chinnakatha, I'll wind up with this, where he would say there is this room of mirrors. And Swami had said, a dog goes inside this, and the moment he sees the room of mirrors, he sees 100 dogs around, and he starts barking, angrily at all these dogs. And then he feels the hundreds of dogs are barking back at him, and he starts getting more infuriated. He pounces on the mirror, he breaks the mirror then breaks into 100 pieces, and what were about 100 dogs has become thousands of dogs, and he literally goes crazy and he runs out. And Swami says, on the other hand, a man walks into the same room of mirrors. What does he do? He does not panic when he sees that. He will look at the image and he will say that, oh, the hair is not fine or the shirt is not aligned. And he will correct himself, right? Because he knows that what he's seeing in the image is an opportunity for him to straighten himself up. Swami would say that is the basic nature of a human being. That is the basic nature of a spiritual aspirant. That any digression and deviation or a flaw which is seen outside, you don't brand that person with that flaw, but you look at it and say that I have to be careful, right? This sort of a digression and this sort of a slip can happen after 30, 40 years with Swami, after being a student of Swami for 10, 15 years. So I need to be careful of that, right? So that should be our attitude when we are looking at these people. Thank you, sister, for asking that question. I don't know if I've convincingly explained it to you and the others who might be having this question in their mind. But nevertheless, thank you for the opportunity to take this up. And if anything more, you can always write to me. I'd be happy to discuss it further. Well, dear listeners, it's time for me to wind up. I've taken a little longer than usual. I'm going to leave you with a beautiful bhajan. On the other end of it, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu and Saprakash for the last segment of today's Thursday Live, the Vahini Satsang. If you have a question, please feel free to write to me. I invite questions to my personal mail ID, which is prem@radiosai.org, prem@radiosai.org. If you can send your questions in your own voice, that would be brilliant. I would like to play it that way. And if you wish to be anonymous, like today's questioner, please let me know. I'll not mention the name. I most humbly offer this effort at Swami's lotus feet, and I do hope whatever I've said is in line with what Swami would expect all of us to learn about what is happening in Mudan Ali. I most humbly and prayerfully offer this at Swami's Lotus Feet. I'll meet you all next week at 7:30 p.m. with another question on the next episode of Radio Sai Answering Both.